The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 3 Podcast.
We are back, and the third hour of the program has dawned. We thank you for being a part of it. Phil Yates joining us in a few minutes, talking about the upcoming draft. 3 weeks from today, we'll be talking about the first round of the draft. It will be in the books. Let's get back to the calls right now and check in with Mike, who is in Austin, Texas. Hello, Mike.
How you doing, Paul? This is Mike from Austin.
Wonderful.
So I just want to touch upon about Jimbo. I think Jimbo is a really good coach, and I think that, I think he's going to have a little trouble right now losing Kellen Mond, because Kellen Mond's been there for about 4 years, and he's going to have to start over with a new quarterback, you know, and he's a systems type of quarterback guy as a coach. And again, when, you know, he had lost that starting quarterback that time down there, that hurt him when he was down there at Florida State. So I think the road's going to be a little rocky for him. Just like it's going to be for Alabama, it's going to be wide open. Who's going to win that conference?
Well, Mike, great to hear from you again. You take care of yourself and let us hear from you soon. Kevin is Ron is up next. I'm looking. Hey, Ron, go right ahead. You were next. Ron is in Florida.
Good afternoon, Mr. Feinbaum. I love your show. I appreciate you and your crew and putting on a fantastic show. And I apologize for my call dropping. I was on the bridge.
That's okay.
Coming back from getting my first COVID shot.
Well, I'm glad you got it.
I am too, but, you know, real quick before I get to my point, I think the best thing about living back in the States is I can wear my Be Calm and Hate LSU and nobody asks me who LSU is.
That's great.
Canada, I got that question a lot.
Where had you previously lived?
I spent 3 years in Edmonton, Alberta, I will tell you this. Most of the license plate holders and college gear I saw was SEC.
No kidding.
Yeah, LSU, Florida, Arkansas, and Alabama.
That is amazing.
But, Florida, too, if I didn't say that. But, you know, I'm sure you've seen this, and I've had this discussion with many of my friends. SEC fans, not just them, they can be the worst. You know, when years go by and the season changes and players come in and players leave, if you've been winning, that's what everybody expects. And if you don't do that, they just lose their mind. And I don't understand how people have gotten to the point where, well, in Florida, I can understand because, you know, for a long time they had Spurrier, and the drop-off just killed a lot of people down there. They were very mad about that. But, I mean, what can we do to get these fans to understand that, just like the NFL, teams change every year sometimes. Just, they're going to do their best. I mean, what else can we expect?
Well, Ron, I think you've raised a fascinating conversation about the evolution of fans. I think fans up until a certain point, and I'm not really sure where that cutoff point comes, although I do have a sense of when it is or when it was, you know, they took great pride in their school and they enjoyed the give and take with their friends, but mostly it was that. I mean, they would go to games with, you know, the other team's friend, their friends from the other team, because it wasn't a war. And then I think somewhere in the 80s, maybe the 90s, as talk radio exploded, as message boards exploded, and ultimately as social media mushroomed, I think it became more divisive because everybody had a voice and the voices were loud and vitriolic, and I think a lot of the bad feelings just simply metastasize, and I feel like I've had a pretty good seat at that at that ugly fight. So but it didn't always,
well,
it wasn't always like this.
No, and as I said before, I mean, I don't know which fans are more amusing on your show, the Alabama lovers or the Alabama haters. And I mean, I'm an Alabama fan, but in my heart, nobody can beat Alabama. But in my head, everybody can, because anybody can beat anybody on any given Saturday.
No, you're right. And
so I want to say I appreciate your show, and you have a great day, and you take care of yourself, sir.
Thank you. Great to hear from you, Ron. Take care of yourself, too, with that shot. I'm sure you'll be okay. Great to hear from you. How about Trey in Tuscaloosa? Hey, Trey.
Hey, my friend. How you been?
Trey, I am well. What about you?
Well, Paul, I've been in the hospital for about 10 days, and I have something to tell you.
Well, please.
That hospital don't pick up SEC Network, so I had to pull you up on my phone, and I couldn't call in, but I did watch you religiously on my phone.
Well, I would like to know what hospital you were in that doesn't get the SEC Network.
Oh, Paul, you don't know about this hospital. I'm down in Mobile, Alabama.
Okay. I am mortified that a hospital in the state of Alabama does not get this network.
Well, they didn't get a lot of channels about that.
Yeah, fortunately, I have not spent a night in a hospital in a long time, but I vaguely remember the TVs weren't very good, and you got about four channels.
Well, that is correct, and it's cold as can be in there. But I want to tell you, I don't think you realize sometimes when people are down and out like that, how much you mean to people, because being able to even just pull you up on my cell phone and watch you and listen to the callers meant the world to me. I felt like it was at home. So I just want to tell you, I love you, my friend, and you mean a lot to a lot of people in this country, whether you believe it or not. So I know people tell you that, but it's true, and it's from the heart. So being able to watch you when I was in the hospital was good. I have a bad heart and lungs from chemicals I got into when I was in Kuwait.
Oh, wow.
But that brings me up to a caller. I think his name was Rick from last Friday. It was a black guy, and he had been overseas too. And I'd like to say to him that I disagreed with some things he said, but one thing I do agree with, when it comes to going to war and protecting this country and our rights, I would be behind him 100%. And whatever he asked me to do, I would do. That situation overseas, Paul, is a brotherhood that you can't imagine. And there, people don't look at each other at color when we know we're fighting for a great cause and that my life and his life depends on each other. And we're over there fighting so we can come home to disagree with him on a lot of things. So I'm glad he's made it home. And anytime he needed me, I'd be there. And I just want to tell you, I appreciate you and your show and the SEC Network, because you did wonders for me when I was in the hospital. And I love you, my friend.
Trey, thank you for saying that. It means so much to all of us. And you take care of yourself, okay? We'll be thinking of you.
Yes, sir. Thank you. I'll be listening. I promise
you.
Cell phone or not.
Thank you very much. Yeah. And Trey gave me an opportunity to say something that I don't really talk about much, but... And I know a lot of times that it's not easy, but you can watch this show on your home devices, whether it's a phone or an iPad or a computer. It's not complicated at all, and I know some of us are a little more technologically challenged than others, but I'm glad he mentioned that. Let's grab a few more calls for those of you who are not challenged. And Don is up next in Ohio. Hello, Don. Good afternoon.
Paul, how are you? I'm calling back. Got disconnected the last time.
Okay, well, I'm glad you're back.
So we were just about talking when we were dropped off was talking about Gene Chizik and Malzahn there in Auburn.
Right.
So how the national championship came out of time for them.
Correct.
Now, I would say that Mr. Chizik, who didn't have a phenomenal record prior to get the Auburn job, had a phenomenal year with an individual named Cam Newton, and then not so much after Cam Newton. But I would say that Gus was good for Auburn, because if you go back and look, he was one of the most successful ones that was against Nick Saban as far as SEC goes.
Oh, yeah, he won three times.
That's what I mean. So I don't know what Auburn was expecting for him to be, like, who's going to succeed that guy, but he was actually, you know, when you tier the SEC and Alabama being the top, he was
Gus Malzahn was a perfect example of a successful coach who didn't play the games. He didn't kiss up to the alums, the power boosters, and they were determined to get him. And, you know, I agree. I think he had a very respectable record. I mean, there were some moments when Gus was very predictable. I think he made a few mistakes along the way. Who doesn't in an eight-year run? But I hope that Brian Harsin does a great job and moves on. But Malzahn, I think, did a lot of great things there. And that program was extremely relevant. And that's what you want to be in the SEC. We'll take a break. We have more to come. More of your phone calls at 855-242-7285. Field Yates will join us next to help us understand better the draft.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%. This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
And we are 3 weeks away from the draft. Begins on April 29th, runs through May 1st. And you can catch it all over the place on ESPN and ABC. And someone who will be talking a lot about the draft leading up to 3 weeks from last night is our next guest. He is Field Yates, who covers the NFL and quite well for ESPN. Field, great to have you on. And, you know, here we are. We're under 3 weeks for the draft. And the burning questions remain all over the place. We know who number one will be. We know who number two will be. But now we're down to number three. And that seems to be where all the buzz is. Good afternoon.
Yeah, good afternoon, Paul. Thanks for having me on. And you're right. It sort of does feel like the NFL draft starts either at pick three or pick four, depending on who you talk to. With Trevor Lawrence bound for Jacksonville, Zach Wilson headed to New York with the Jets, I would say the strong likelihood at this point is that Mac Jones is going to be a San Francisco 49er. And while we've all seen moments in the NFL draft where whatever all of us were predicting proved to not be true, there is enough buzz and steam and smoke surrounding the possibility of Mac Jones being a 49er that I think there's a much better chance than not that he does wind up in San Francisco. And if such is the case, then we're wondering whether the draft starts at pick four, where I think things would get really interesting, Paul, because Atlanta would have the option to draft a quarterback if they feel as though Matt Ryan's days are numbered, or they could take one of the premier playmaking pass catchers, Kyle Pitts from Florida, Ja'Marr Chase from LSU as examples, and say, Matt Ryan's not done yet, but adding one more elite pass catcher could turn this offense from good to great, and we can worry about our future quarterback down the line.
I want to come back to Mac Jones, but I'm really intrigued because you have Ja'Marr Chase, Pitts. There's also Waddle and Devontae Smith. We know all four of those players very, very well. How do you differentiate one from the next?
Yeah, so I think the first thing you have to ask yourself is that for evaluation purposes, Kyle Pitts is a tight end. But is your plan to utilize him as just an offensive weapon? I don't know that we have a player who's a perfect facsimile of Kyle Pitts in the NFL. I think the comparison that you've heard on occasion is that if he can have an impact akin to Travis Kelce, that would be what a team is hoping for. And I have a rule of thumb that I try not to make player comparisons to guys who are perennial all-pros. But when you see Kyle Pitts, you see just a difference-making athlete. You see a player who can run routes like a wide receiver, can align as if you're a wide receiver. But he does play in line as well, which is why the Travis Kelce comparisons, although a little bit risky because of all that Kelce has accomplished, I think are fair in this occasion. I think there's a case that he's the best pass catcher in this class because of the fact that there's no one else like him in this class. Now, if you're going to go the route of a traditional wide receiver, I do think that any of the three between Ja'Marr Chase, Devontae Smith, and Jalen Waddle are very, very strong candidates to be the best wide receiver in this year's class. I think Chase is probably the most powerful and physical. I think Devontae Smith may be the most polished and reliable as a catcher. And then Jalen Waddle is the most explosive player in this year's draft. That's assuming, and I have good reason to assume, that he'll be back to form prior to that ankle injury suffered in the opening kickoff against Tennessee. So I think you can't go wrong with any of them. But if I had to imagine, I think Ja'Marr Chase stacks up as the number one wide receiver on a lot of teams' boards. And then it's a coin flip between the two Alabama wide receivers behind him.
He should tell me when I was a newspaper writer not to bury the lead, and I think I did there with Mac Jones, so I want to go back there for a second, Field. How did Mac Jones, assuming this happens, but how did Mac Jones this quickly go from a good quarterback who ended up becoming a Heisman candidate to the number three player taken in the draft?
Yeah, so I think what's really interesting about this year's quarterback class, and I suppose it does apply to every year, Paul, is that we in the media are tasked with evaluating these players for the entire league. So if I were to stack up the five presumptive first-round quarterbacks, I think Mac Jones would be fifth on my list. Teams, though, are evaluating these players not for how they fit for the rest of the league, but for how they fit for their particular team and their offense. And it seems as though the 49ers believe that Mac Jones, with his uncanny accuracy, very good decision-making, natural leadership, determination, and some of the traits that I think were really shown this past year in his full season as a starter, to be the hallmarks of his game. Whereas if they were to evaluate other quarterbacks in this year's class, they may say, hey, you know what? Maybe for Atlanta at pick four, maybe Trey Lance would make more sense for them than Mac Jones. Or if New England were to trade up for pick four, maybe Justin Fields makes more sense for them than Mac Jones. But a quarterback and a team is a marriage, and they got to be right for each other. So Mac has done, I would argue, everything in his control during the 2020 college football season and the pre-draft process to the maximum ability. I don't think there is a single thing in which he has misstepped over the past, let's call it 8 or 9 months. Remarkable campaign on the field, excellent pre-draft process, including a stellar week at the Senior Bowl. And I don't need to explain this to you or anybody listening to the show, but you know, Mac is the kind of player who's equipped to handle the spotlight, be the kind of player that can step in front of a microphone and represent your program at a high level.
And would you say, I'm assuming you would, the same about Zach Wilson?
Yeah, Zach Wilson's interesting only because, and this is not his error, nothing he's done wrong, but what we're going to see for Zach Wilson is how does he handle a different level of pressure? And at BYU, as we know, you know, their biggest game of this past year was Coastal Carolina, right? I mean, what's the line if Mac Jones and Alabama were to line up against Coastal Carolina this weekend if you use their two past, you know, this past year's teams, right? I mean, Mac Jones is used to the pressure of playing Auburn and Georgia and Florida, and then Florida again in the SEC championship game and Ohio State and Notre Dame. So I think for Zach Wilson, the projection is, how does he step up when he's playing better competition? And then also, how does he step up in a market that, you know, we can say that markets don't matter and certain players are just built for it, but New York is a really unique place. I mean, you've got countless media members that will be around Zach Wilson every step of the way. Trevor Lawrence will see a lot of it in Jacksonville too, but I'm just telling you, the number of cameras might be 10 times in New York what it is in Jacksonville for Trevor Lawrence. So I think Zach Wilson has so many of the physical tools. He's got this confidence about him that I think makes him infectious for his teammates. I just think that it's a bit of a projection for any quarterback that didn't play in a Power 5 conference, and that's really not his fault, right? I mean, Zach Wilson was overlooked in the recruiting process. His own home state university, his dream school, University of Utah, wouldn't even offer him a scholarship, which, you know, 4 years later we realize was a rather grave error.
And finally, and I know we're quarterback heavy here, but you know, I was hearing some of the people that you sit with occasionally on these shows tell me 6-9 months ago that Justin Fields might be better than Trevor Lawrence. What happened?
I don't know that anything happened, and I don't know that Justin Fields should be discounted as a quarterback who has a chance to reach a height close to Trevor Lawrence in the NFL. I have a hard time finding something when I watch Justin Fields that there isn't to like. Now, there were a couple of moments in rather large games, Northwestern and Indiana, where Justin Fields was not at his best, but we all recall the college football playoff national semifinal against Clemson when he throws six touchdowns. Certainly physically has so many of the tools. He's got outstanding football intelligence. He's a guy who has worked hard at his craft. He's been willing to handle big moments, right? I mean, he's been on the map since he was 15 years old as one of the top players in the country. Him and Trevor obviously going hand in hand in the Atlanta area as the two players, the two prized recruits in that year's class. So I believe that the demeanor of Justin Fields bodes well for stardom. I know we've heard about the possibility of him falling a tiny bit in the draft, but Paul, I tend to think that once we get to April 29th, not 20 nights from right now, I think these quarterbacks are going to go early because teams are going to move up, realizing that if you don't get this player now, you're bypassing what could be a franchise-altering selection.
Always just a fantastic conversation with Field Yates. Field, thank you very much. I know it's a busy time. Appreciate you dropping by. We love it.
Thanks, Paul. Always great to catch up.
You got it. One of the best ever, Field Yates, with his analysis of the NFL draft. We are going to head to the break. More of your phone calls, and you're welcome to call in now. We got some 90 minutes remaining, and it's all yours at 855-242-7285.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand-name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free, no insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/paul. That's hims.com/paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
And welcome back. Great to have all of you here, and let's get back to the call. If you want to give us a ring, this is your moment. 855-242-7285. Let's check in with Tim, who is up next in Florida. Hello, Tim.
Hey, Paul, thanks for taking my call. First-time caller, long-time listener. Just a little background. I am originally from Louisville, and I'm a graduate of the University of Louisville. And I was just curious. I mean, I have to admit I'm a little jealous hearing all this great talk about the Alabamas and the Floridas of the world. So my question to you is real simple. Outside of the once a decade that we have a competitive team in the top 15, if you will, with a Teddy Bridgewater or Lamar Jackson or at the helm, what would it take to get a team like the University of Louisville consistently into that party, that playoff party? And second question for you is, do you think that Scott Satterfield is the guy that could do it?
I think Scott Satterfield is capable of it, but here is really the ultimate question. If he is a great coach, then can Louisville keep him? And I think ultimately that's a problem for a school like Louisville. Schnellenberger was successful there, but that was a completely different situation. But ultimately he left. Petrino was successful. And what did he do? So, yeah, how do you keep someone at Louisville is the challenge. I happen to think it's a great city. it's the kind of place where you can make a lot of money. But is it enough? Is it a destination job in football like it is in basketball?
Not, I would agree with you on that. I guess then part of my question is, not just for Louisville in general, any team at that tier, what does it take to break that ceiling at this point?
Well, I think it's your entire, it's entirely capable. You can do it. And I think the challenge is sustaining it. And you already alluded to that in your preamble. And, you you're fortunate. You get that player, and you mentioned the two that matter, and maybe another one or two. But, right now in college football, it's so top-heavy. It's never been like this before. I was looking at a new ESPN 300 or whatever they call it, and the top player, I think he came from Texas. Where is he going? He's a quarterback?
Ohio State.
I mean, there are I have never seen a situation where the best players are all going to the same schools. And I'm talking about four to eight schools. And the odds of Louisville getting that type of player are very slim. Louisville can get the Lamar Jackson and Bridgewater and the Brom from 35 years ago. But it's hard to compete with Alabama and Clemson and Georgia in Oklahoma in that upper tier right now, because they're nowhere near the playoffs, and the playoffs are dictating everything in recruiting.
Good call. I appreciate your time. A great show as always.
Thank you, Tim. And that's really an interesting question, and I throw it out there. Who can crash that party? And I'm not talking about Florida under Dan Mullen. Florida's won countless national championships. A&M is in contention, but is there an outlier school that can consistently be at the party? And because they can, I'm just telling you right now, right at this point, until the playoff expands or we have some big bang effect in college football, I don't see it changing. This has been happening for a number of years, and there's no let up in sight. You have about 8 to 10 schools, and we know who they are, and a great many of them are in the SEC, from Florida to A&M, LSU. I mean, A&M with Jimbo Fisher, is now in contention. But, what did they do? They went out and got an accomplished coach and paid him $7 million a year. Scott Satterfield's a really good coach, but is he capable of doing that? And if he is, are you going to be able to keep him there? I mean, if he suddenly blows things out and goes 10-2 next year and 11-1 the next year and maybe makes the playoff or finishes right out of there, are you seriously thinking that he will stay in Louisville? Is Louisville going to pay him $6 or $10 million a year? I mean, they did that with Rick Pitino in basketball, and I don't know why Louisville couldn't, when you consider they have facilities and they have the pedigree of the ACC. But something tells me he would move on. Let's go next to Matt, who was up next in South Alabama. Hey, Matt, thanks. Good afternoon.
Hey, Paul. Thanks for taking my call. I was going to comment on why my theory, I guess, as to why Mac Jones, is rising in the draft stock, I guess you could say. I think, when it comes to crunch time right now, that the NFL coaches are pulling out the hard data, pulling out the numbers and everything. And when you pull out the numbers, and the stats and everything, Mac Jones has the highest completion percentage in the history of college football and the highest QBR rating, since the QBR rating came out in 2011. And then also you have to base those stats also he had the most passing yards in a single season of any college football quarterback in history. So that's got to mean something. I mean, numbers wise, you have Mac Jones and then you have everybody else. I mean, I guess maybe he didn't get as many rushing yards, but he hardly ever got sacked. He had really good escapability and he actually really was very mobile. He's just not going to get you a lot of rushing yards, you don't need rushing yards as a quarterback. You have a running back. I mean, I guess they say to trick the defense, but, it'll catch the defense off guard, I guess, if you have a mobile quarterback. But I don't think it matters how much NFL changes. A good passer is always going to be the person that wins the Super Bowls, which is still happening now. It's pocket passers that are winning Super Bowls.
Matt, you're absolutely right. I couldn't agree more. Hey, thank you for sharing that with us. A very interesting call. And I don't know, I didn't mean to move past Matt, but I can't help but think about that previous caller about Louisville. And I had a friend of mine just sent me a note saying, you know, what about Clemson? But, you know, Clemson has always had a football reputation. Clemson won the national championship in 1981 and, you know, probably would have continued on that trajectory under Danny Ford and, you know, previously with Charlie Pell before he went to Florida, had they not, you know, been brought to their knees by the NCAA. So I don't think Clemson is really, even though Clemson's winning now, I mean, why are they winning? They hired a coach that nobody thought would win, but it, you know, it finally started happening. And then they took advantage of a couple of really key things. Number one, Florida State start to decline. And that's really the most important thing that happened. And they also were fortunate that their in-state rival started to decline. So Clemson really had a couple of things going for it. A weakened ACC because of Florida State's woes under in the final years under Jimbo. And then the departure of Spurrier. Don't forget, in 2014, Spurrier had a 5-game winning streak against Clemson, and then everything changed, and you know, you have to wonder when it's going to change back. Some interesting questions. We have a long way to go, and we hope you'll give us a ring at 855-242-7285.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
We are back. Sean is in California here on a Friday afternoon. Hello, Sean.
Paul, how's it going?
It's great. How are you?
Oh, man, it's beautiful. Beautiful day outside. It's kind of warming up out here a little bit, so everything's good. I just calling to say hi, Paul. You know, I was really calling back because I wanted my son to hear me on television. When I told him that I was on your show, he almost lost his mind.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Hello?
Yeah, we're still here, Sean.
No, I'm sorry. Yeah, he's 11 years old, and he was just super excited to hear that I was on TV. But really, really, Paul, I was calling because I've been listening to a lot of this Mac Jones talk, and I'm finding it a little interesting because he's kind of, you know, we see him going up in the draft, but there's some kind of criticism that's following behind him. And one of the things that I've heard, especially this morning on ESPN, is that it was hard to give a lot of credence to what he's doing and to, you know, the fact that his stock is going up is because he plays at Alabama and he plays on loaded teams. And for me, Paul, I think that's a little unfair because the one thing, and especially in Mac's case, the one thing that we know that happens at Alabama, besides the greatest football coach in college football history, is the fact that he takes good players and he puts them in great situations to compete against each other, which allows those players to develop into the Mac Joneses and the Devontae Smiths that we're seeing right now. And I think that's one thing that's a little bit underrated about Mac and the Alabama program, because we know Mac was a scout team quarterback. He played behind Jalen. He played behind Tua. And I think he waited his turn, and I think he deserves, you know, where he's at right now in the draft. What do you think about that, Paul?
Yeah, no, Sean, I think it is. I think until recently it was a conundrum that not many people could solve because they looked at it and they go, he had Najee Harris, he had, you know, Waddle and Smith and, you know, Dickerson as a center. And, you know, who can't do well in that situation? Well, a lot of people may not be able to do well. And I think the Senior Bowl got him through that conversation. And then, you know, the pro day is another opportunity. And, you know that there is much more to the NFL draft than what you did in college. I mean, you have to be able to answer questions. You have to be able to show aptitude.
Right.
And you're not going to take somebody third in the draft unless you have aced every one of those exams.
Right, right. And Paul, listen, he's a big, strong kid. He throws the deep ball better than anybody in the country. We've seen that this year. I mean, he's got a great arm. You talked about his aptitude. They say he's a great decision maker. That plays right into his aptitude. But I mean, I just think he's deserved everything he's getting right now. And like I said, he's a redshirt junior, so he's mature. So I just think the criticism is a little bit unfair for Mac, but unfortunately. But also, Paul, I haven't heard much about Najee Harris.
I agree with you. He is not getting much respect. In fact, he cracked back at, Todd McShade the other day, who criticized something, some technique. And, I wonder, though, if this is not – and I'm not a draft guy, so I'm just giving my – I follow it like you do, but I'm
– Neither am I, Paul.
I don't study it for 12 months of the year. And –
Right.
Running backs are not a high commodity anymore.
That's true. That's true. The game has changed. It's almost like basketball where, the game has changed so much. Football has become such an offensive sport now, right, where running the ball in defense isn't quite at that premium that it once was. And we see that in basketball as well, where we're saying, hey, if you can shoot the three, right, we got a place for you, and it takes away some of the inside game. It takes away some of the half court game that we saw. Matter of fact, going back to the NCAA tournament, I mean, we know Gonzaga had great guard, but they also had Drew Timmy, and he was a poor man's Christian Laettner, and it provided that balance that made them virtually unstoppable until they ran into good.
I agree with you on that.
Week or two, right. I think I mentioned to you a couple of weeks ago, Paul, that Baylor has the guards to beat Gonzaga, and if they can keep their bigs out of foul trouble, they'll beat Gonzaga, and that's exactly what happened. Their guards were better, and their bigs were just bothersome to Corey Kispert and Drew Timmy.
No, I was too stubborn. I decided on day one that the Zags were going to win, and I saw that freight train coming down, but I refused to acknowledge it. Hey, thanks for the call. Great to hear from you, Sean.
Thank you, Paul. Take care.
Wonderful call, and we've got a lot of really good calls. How about Joseph in Mississippi? How are you, my man?
Hey, Mr. Paul. I'm doing well. I'm glad it sounds like you're doing great.
All good.
Yeah, it's great down here. Glad it's getting to be summertime since all that cold was about backed out. But I was just going to call and ask you, that last guest you had, but, he didn't mention anything about Elijah Moore, and I believe he's probably not getting as much respect as he should. And I know maybe it's because he opted out and didn't want to play against LSU and Indiana, but
Joseph. Every time we talk about this, somebody from Ole Miss mentions him. Have you seen any? Where is he projected right now?
Well, one draft has him, I think, at 28 pick, and then another one that I was reading the other day was on the bottom line. It said the top 50 players, and he was ranked.
Hey, Joseph, let me ask you this. I mean, how much, and I don't know the answer to this, but how much do you think the off-the-field issues have hurt him?
Well, that's what I'm thinking that probably did. That's what I'm imagining that's a problem. And because he would have been, he was, up there as, one of the best wide receivers all season and was just breaking. I mean, what he did against that, Alabama.
Yeah, but Joseph, let me caution you. When you're analyzing the draft, you cannot think like a fan. This is a billion-dollar business, and Field Yates didn't tell. We didn't talk about it this time, but the last time he was on, he said he used to work for the Chiefs, and he would pick up the draft prospects at the airport, and he said every single thing they did, from the moment they got in the car to the moment they left, that's how they decided. the intangibles. And, you know, again, I don't know I don't know Elijah Moore, but I know what his reputation has been off the field. And I mean, he recovered from his mistakes, but did he recover enough to be a high draft choice?
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.